attendance. Thank you all for your attendance. I should, as chair of this meeting, formally open this meeting of the Inner West Local Planning Panel. In doing so, on behalf of the Council, I should acknowledge the Gadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation, on whose country this meeting is taking place today, their elders past and present. When we commence this meeting, it's appropriate for us panel members to introduce ourselves. I'm David Lloyd, I chair this meeting. I'm a lawyer, a QC, a former judge of the Land and Environment Court, a former acting judge of the Supreme Court, currently an adjunct professor of law at Western Sydney University. All right, who wants to go next?
I'm Ken Hawke. I'm the community representative on the panel. I've lived in the Inner West for 45 years, and I worked in planning, local government planning, for 40 years prior to my retirement. Thank you.
Ms. Day.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Lindsay Day. I'm a consultant town planner. I have degrees in geography, natural resource management, and town and country planning. I'm a corporate member of the Planning Institute of Australia. I am on this panel and two others, that's Bayside and Lane Cove. And that's all from me.
Mr. Johnson.
Good afternoon. David Johnson's my name. I'm an environmental scientist. I have been a consultant for most of my life. I currently work in the areas of environmental planning and community consultation. I have formerly been a member of the, for 6 years, the Planning Assessment Commission or Independent Planning Commission, and prior to that, an acting commissioner in the Land and Environment Court. I also sit on three other local planning panels. Thank you.
All right. So we can now move on to the agenda. The next item is declarations of interest, and there are none. Then we go on to the various matters we have to deal with. Firstly is a standing item, a report on outstanding matters that are pending before the panel, which we have already considered. Next is item number two. This is the proposed development at 73 Nelson Street, Roselle. It comprises a ground and first floor alterations and additions at the rear of an existing dwelling house. We have noticed that there is a number of people who wish to address the panel. Our normal practice is that we hear no more than three objectors and then hear from the applicant. There are more than three objectors here, so I will hear the first three and then determine whether or not we wish to hear anyone else. The first person on my list is Ray James. Is Ray James somewhere? We don't have Mr. Ray James. All right, next we have Joy Roses. Is Joy Roses there? Well, that makes it easier. Then Jason Burton.
Yes, I'm here.
You're here. Good. All right, Jason. You can proceed. You have the protocol that governs these meetings allows members of the public to address the panel for up to 3 minutes. So your 3 minutes starts now.
Okay. Thank you.
For the record, your name and address.
Yeah, my name's Jason Burton. My address is 8 York Place, Roselle.
Yes. Proceed.
Okay. My concerns are the access via York Place to the rear of 73 Nelson Street. There is no legal right to access 73 Nelson Street from York Place. And currently there is a gate at the rear of 73 Nelson Street. I would like that the fence re-established so that there can be no access from York Place to 73 Nelson Street. I would like that to be performed prior to any commencement of construction. This way we won't have any inconvenience in York Place from any construction workers. And this is like a lengthy 2-year process to construct this, 18 months to 2 years. I don't want to be inconvenienced like that. The other thing is, we're not a laneway. It will affect our property values, for one, if this is considered a laneway. I don't mind if there's a development going in 73 Nelson Street. I just do not want anything through York Place. We recently had, the council recently resurfaced York Place, and it was a quite a disgraceful surface up until that point. I don't want to see the increase in traffic volumes from heavy vehicles lead to any further degradation of the recent resurfacing. So it's been a great addition to the street, because young children are now able to get out there, rollerblade, skateboard, play in the street and so forth. I don't want an added risk to that by having vehicles coming up and down the street more than what it is now. It's just residents, basically. So that's my main concerns. I would like to see the trees contained at the back of the fence, but as far as there being a development at 73 Nelson Street, I don't have a problem with them developing. I just don't want them accessing it through our street.
Any questions from the panel?
No questions.
No questions? All right, thank you for that. The next person on my list is Dr. Badami. Dr. Badami? Not there? All right. Sunil Badami? Not here? All right. April Murdoch?
Oh, sorry to interrupt, Mr. Chair. Sunil Badami is in the meeting.
Well,
he's just on mute. I'll ask for him to unmute.
Okay, good.
He doesn't seem to be responding.
Mr.
Hello, can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, we can hear you at last. Yes, you can.
Oh, sorry about that. I've been trying to get on via Zoom and via the internet. I'd like to thank you very much to the panel and the council for taking all this time to consider our concerns in regards to the development. I concur with my neighbour, Jason Burton, in regards to access via the back of 73 Nelson. The council has established that there's no legal right of way over 7A York Place. And as Jason pointed out, we are a small street with limited parking, very close to the egress point of the driveway. We are concerned about damage to street furniture and trees in our street as a result of heavy traffic going up and down the street, especially so soon after the street was resurfaced. And like Jason, I would like to ensure that there's no further confusion in regards to the access or illegal access to the back of 73 Nelson by rebuilding the the fence, so that there is no gate. I'd also like to ensure that there's no modification to the development application to allow any access by builders or by the residents of 73 Nelson during or after construction. I'd also like to ensure that the existing tree line, apart from the tree on the corner near the pool, is maintained to maintain the local heritage area value and views of York Place, particularly the terraces on our side, which are one of the last remaining contiguous heritage terraces in the peninsula. I'd also like, as Jason pointed out, to have a... To be advised by the residents that they won't be using the driveway for parking, or you know, the gate for parking or access before, during or after construction. I'd like a written undertaking from them regarding that. And I'd also like some information regarding whom we may report any infringements or breaches of the council or panel's ruling in regard to no access to via that gate.
All right, any questions from the panel? No? I'm getting a no from everyone. All right, thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Lloyd. I just did want to say as well, I'm getting a message from our neighbour at 71 Nelson Street, Joy Roses. She's trying to access via Zoom and via phone, and she's finding some difficulties. I know that when I tried to access on Zoom, there were issues in regards to the access code, and I was unable to access it.
All right, we'll work on that while we hear from the next person. The next person is April Murdoch.
April Murdoch's my partner, my wife. Unfortunately, she is accompanying my daughter to a medical appointment, but April concurs with the concerns that I have in regard to access to the gate, enforcement of the ruling in regards to no access via the gate, the closing up of the gate, the removal of the tree, no removal of trees on the York Street boundary apart from the one in the corner.
All right, thank you.
You very much.
Next is Raymond Panetta. Is Mr. Panetta there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. The ball's in your court.
Okay, look, for me, I guess it's relatively straightforward.
You better tell us who you are.
Yes, sorry. My name is Raymond Panetta. Yes. I'm the architect and the applicant. Yes. I'm here on behalf of the owners of the property, Philip Kousis and Amy Kousis. Like I said, from an architect's point of view, from our point of view, it's always the driveway didn't form part of this application. So the application really was for the alterations and additions of the dwelling and a swimming pool. And we're happy with the planner's recommendations to date with regards to the legal right to the access and the driveway. That didn't form part of this application. So I'm not here to dispute what everyone's saying, but it's not part of this application. And really, I'm really here to answer any questions, really, if anyone has any.
Any questions, panel?
Yes, one from me. Thank you. Sorry, after you, Ken.
Oh, thank you, Lindsay. Mr. Panetta, you've heard all of the discussion about the rear access or the access from York Place. Do you think this development, if it was approved, could actually be serviced from Nelson Street without any access from York Place, given the size of the renovation?
In terms of the building development?
Yes.
Look, it would make things more difficult, but look, anything's possible from a construction point of view, but it would make it more difficult, I would suggest.
Okay, thank you.
Just a couple of things, Mr. Panetta. I note on the DA plans that were before us today, that the rear fence to York Place is actually not to have a gate in it. It'd appear on most of the floor plans that it's actually a solid fence. Currently it isn't, and currently there is a car space indicated on the northeast part of the site, which interestingly is to be retained. So I guess one of my questions is why, if the York Place rear boundary is to be a solid fence, is the car space to be retained? Because it could, if there is no need for a car space and a solid fence at York Place, be made into additional landscaping, which would benefit residents and possibly allow for a little bit of tree retention in that northeast corner.
So where are you talking with regards to this solid fence?
This is at the rear.
I guess the objective really, and I just want to see where it is on a plan, the objective was really not to change anything on that back. It was to retain. Look, up until all of these submissions, I personally had no idea that the car space was or not. I just assumed that it was approved. We had documents from council showing it there. So I was just under the assumption that it was existing and not to change. So I never really proposed to change that rear fence. I'm just unsure as to where you've seen that note.
It's on page 14 of the application. Sorry, it's Neil Badami here. It's on page 14 of the agenda today for item 2. It shows that there's an existing car space, no change.
And then all of the DA plans indicate a solid fence at the rear. So it just seems a little bit strange that there is this solid fence proposed and an existing car space to be retained.
I guess there was never a proposal to change that rear fence. I'm still finding it hard to find on the documents where we've shown that, but the intention was just no change to that rear fence. So,
okay, so that there will effectively be a gate that will allow a vehicle across the slither of land that doesn't belong to the site into the rear of the property, probably post-construction, given that we've conditioned the proposed consent to not allow vehicular access unless the applicant can prove that they have the right to access with a car.
I hear what you're saying. I agree with that. But like I said, the proposal is just not to change that fence. So.
Okay. And just a...
I didn't really propose any gates or anything across there. It was just existing.
Yeah. Also, just as a secondary matter regarding the landscape plan, I note on your last paragraph of the landscape plan, there's a series, paragraph 3, maintenance, refers to... requiring a 3-month maintenance schedule to ensure that everything is commenced and is in the ground and is surviving. Normally, these consents require a 12-month maintenance period. So I'm just suggesting that it would be, as a panel member, that I think it would be more consistent for us to change that or to require that the property landscaping be maintained for a period of 12 months to ensure it's better established.
That's perfectly fine. I'm fine with it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Now, there was one person who was trying to get through, Joy Roses. Is she able to get through?
She's saying that she can't get in. She's trying. I've sent her the phone number link and she's been given a link by council to try and get in.
We do have an objection from her in writing, which we understand and which we have read. So if she can't get through, we will take on board what she has provided in writing.
Okay, now I'll let her know. Excuse me, Mr. Lloyd and Ms. Day. I just wanted to confirm, if there is no change to the back fence, obviously, we in York Place would very much like the back fence to be closed off so that there is no further ingress or egress from the back or the incorrectly proposed existing car space. And we'd ask that the back fence be rebuilt so that there is no gate, so that there is no possibility for potential breaches by inadvertent or purposeful by either the residents or by the by builders or whoever, before, well, during and after construction.
Well, I'll ask Mr. Panetta, do you agree to that?
Again, the proposal, there was no change to that rear fence, so I wouldn't suggest the client would want to spend any money changing that rear fence. We wouldn't like to do that, no.
No. All right, well, we will consider what's been put to us and come up with a determination in due course.
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Chair, but Joy Roses is in the meeting now.
Oh, good. All right. Joy Roses is available. Are you there, please? We've lost her again, have we?
No, It's tricky to unmute when you're on the phone, unfortunately, because you can't see the picture.
I'll just take this quick opportunity while we're waiting for Joy.
Hello.
You're Miss Rose?
Sorry. I'm having trouble with the tech side of everything.
All right, we can hear you.
I do apologise.
You proceed.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, so I'm not sure what I've missed so far. So I'm the daughter of Penny Roses, and my mum is quite elderly and very broken English. So I'm on this to just get a few points that she discussed with me across to you guys. Now, the main thing is that I'm that her main concern, a few things, but mainly her concern about another high building next to her property, which, as you know, she's got one on the right and one at the back, and to do one on the left, the left side, is going to take a lot of sun away from her, and also it's going to be very claustrophobic with such high buildings around her. A few other things that she is concerned about is that's her main concern, the tall building. I'm also concerned about her health to do with the dust and the construction that will be going on over the 12-month period, or probably more. So, you know, with building works, we can never assume how long they're going to take. And being my mum's going to be nearly 90, I'm worried that there's going to be a lot of stress involved while these works are happening. And also maybe, you know, I do think it'll be a lot of danger in the street, being a small street with construction trucks and so on. I think that's going to be a very difficult thing to try and proceed with. So they're the main thing. The other thing is that she does have concerns about any damage that might be caused if any construction went ahead, being that it is a big construction job they are doing. She would need to clarify that what happens if there is damage to her property. Her property is quite old. It is over 100 years old. She's at an age where it's very stressful. She's had problems with people moving fences over the years on that property at next door. So she's lost a lot of her own property during that, and that really stressed her out. So this is very stressful for her to know that there's going to be a building works that will go on. And I don't know if we can find some sort of solution or some way to compromise with it. But, you know, I have to consider my mum's health as a priority.
All right. Thank you for that.
Yeah. That's okay. Thank you.
Yep. Well, as I said previously, we will consider what's been put to us and publish our determination in due course. So with that, we can now move on to item number 3, which is the proposed development at 470 Parramatta Road, Petersham, which has been recommended for refusal. Is Dennis Pahos here, please? Do we have Dennis Pahos?
No? Yes, you be here.
We do. Ah, we do. All right.
Absolutely.
You have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Lloyd. Thank you, Ms. Lindsay Day. Thanks, everybody, for being here and for having me.
I should remind you that we do have your written statement.
Okay. Are there any comments that you wanted to, as a precursor from your end, or did you want me to...
Well, if there's anything you want to particularly identify, please do.
Well, first and foremost, look, I just wanted to reinforce or have my time here today to briefly discuss or to point out some issues that I have with the council's refusal. My approach will be twofold. I'll give you a very, very brief history as to what's occurred over the last 3 years, and then I'll give you an explanation around council's concerns. So I'll first and foremost start off with...
If I can interrupt, what we would like you to do is, if you can, address the reasons for refusal set out in the assessment report.
Rightio. Okay, so the reasons for refusal, if we come to the ancillary issue with regards to food and music, the DJ stage and the dance floor. I believe that the stage and dance floor are a natural part of food, have been for as far as I can remember. It is an ancillary to a wedding. It is an ancillary to any good venue to give you an example, like Soda Factory or Coogee Pavilion, to name a couple. The DJ or the music side of the business is at the very core of the business, although that the business is primarily a restaurant and bar. There's a personal aspect to the business. I am a musician. I come from a classical background. I've transformed myself or transitioned into electronic music, and it's something that I wanted to pursue at the venue. So at the very core, there's also that desire as well. I believe, now I've also spoken to liquor and gaming, and at the core of a venue, when it includes or involves liquor and entertainment, that food be the very primary source of that model in which it is. Secondly, I'd like to point out the next concern, which I believe is the moment. Now, just going back to the food and restaurant, the premise has been for 47 years a bar, restaurant and an entertainment area. As per the annex or the attachments that I've provided, it was a South American restaurant, Peruvian restaurant, up until 2015, and had been conducting itself with no issue in terms of noise or acoustics or anything else as a bar restaurant for that amount of time. I'd like to point out that the native language to Tim Cooper, my town planner, is English, and so it is Ellen Shannon's. There was no miscommunication between those two town planners or counterparts in basically appeasing any issues that Ellen Shannon had. She gave us basically the goalpost to shoot. She gave us some key concerns that we had to appease. We did, as part of the 8.2 review, and then Andrew Newman basically flipped it on its back and said otherwise.
Excuse me, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
Mr. Perhaps you've gone past your 3 minutes that we allow people to address us. How much longer will you be?
I believe I'll be another minute and a half.
All right, you proceed.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that. Look, there are a few things that I'd like to just point out. First and foremost, there was the access from the rear. The rear access has already been appointed there at the brothel next door. There is a 24-hour access, so I don't see that being an issue. In terms of the laneway, it's quite slum-like at the moment. What I'm considering here to do is provide an aesthetic in accordance with a Victorian or a Victorian facade or an Edwardian facade. It's very roller door like access at the back at the moment, so it'll provide a refuge to the neighbourhood as it stands. I dispute what Andrew was saying about the heritage of the building. If anything, the font of my signage will be a Times New Roman font. I'm willing to remove the Coca-Cola sign and bring it to its original glory. And with the plans of gentrification for 47 Parramatta Road, Auburn. The rear access, again, I don't believe is an issue, considering that there is 24 access there at the brothel. And in terms of the businesses as a whole around that area, there is the Norton Pub, which is 24 hours as well. So in terms of operation, I'm asking for up to 3 a.m. So I believe I'm in my last 30 seconds. So what I'm asking here is for the LPP today to consider that rear entry to Queen Street won't be an issue, considering that the brothel already has that 24-hour access. And in fact, I'll be creating security and gentrify the area at the back for it to be secure, for it to be a haven or a refuge for the neighbourhood. The D stage, the DJ stage and dance floor, for myself and budding artists, is at the core of the business. The amplified music component of the business will be limited. It will be controlled by limiters and double glazing. But I dare say that it's been like this for the last 47 years. Like I said, South American Peruvian music is very, very loud. There was live entertainment and there were never an issue. The operation, the operating hour, 7 a.m. to 3 a.m., I'd like to be considered, given the fact that there is 24-hour access at the brothel next door, and then there's the Norton Pub across the road, which is a 24-hour roster, and the capacity to be increased to 200. But look, if just to recap, the DJ or the entertainment component is primarily more around the Friday and Saturday night between the hours and 10 and 3 hours. So that's 5. That's 10 hours a week is what I'm considering here. But in terms of the heritage and the conservation that Andrew Newman had brought to the table, well, I'm actually wanting to align myself completely to the restoration of that building with French plaster and what have you. It'll be internally and externally, and I am looking forward to produce a product or a service here that is in alignment to that Victorian Edwardian QVB-like heritage listing-like a product, and there was nothing there to suggest otherwise. So I'm just a bit confused as to what Andrew was alluding to.
All right, I'll ask the panel. Any questions by panel members?
I have one question, Mr. Payats. You've actually requested a capacity of 200 people, and I saw on the application for licensing on the front of the building that you've asked for 300 people. You've actually talked about the restaurant side of this, and you want 20 hours a day access. What's not gelling with me is that it all comes out, you're catering for all of those people out of a kitchen that's only 8 square metres. How is that possible, Mr. Payance?
That's an excellent question. So basically the 300 is not true. I'm not sure where the 300 come from.
It came from your application for a licensing, which is on the front of the premises.
That's a typo. So going back to 2019 in September, it's supposed to be 200, not 300. That's just a typo. And there's been a lot of to-ing and fro-ing with the your sister agency there, being the Liquor and Gaming. There was a lot of confusion there, a lot of people coming in and out.
Okay, I'll accept that, Mr. Payas.
Now, as far as the kitchen is concerned, it's a hot dog restaurant. I'm wanting to provide an organic product, something that is in alignment to today's standards in terms of health and prosperity. Hot dogs really don't take that. I mean, you can cut hot dogs at a football game or what have you. To just answer that question particularly, I mean, you could have Gallo's pies trading out of Parramatta Stadium, for instance, to an audience of 20,000 people. So to sit at a small kitchen, won't appease 200 people. I find that a bit conflicting to understand. And also, the 200 audience, we all know that's more of a Friday, Saturday night figure. I mean, I don't believe that I'll be having that audience. And I'm not really interested in performing personally as a musician on Monday to Thursday. I'm in IP at the moment. It's really, really hard and difficult. I'm wanting to transition, see change into music. It's a passion of mine. I hold it very close to my heart, and it's something that I want to explore with consumers, with the public, and also foster safe ground for budding artists, for young up and coming. So it's not primarily about the alcohol. It's not about people running around and carrying on. There would be nothing that I would conjure to create a level of angst or to create a problem with my career moving forward.
Okay, thank you very much indeed, Mr. Payas.
I think you've answered the question, which was related to the size of the kitchen. Any other questions from the panel?
No.
No? All right. Well, thank you for that. And as with the previous matter, we'll consider what's been put to us and publish our decision in due course. And thank you very much. So we'll now proceed to item number 4. This is the proposed community markets in King Street, Newtown. We have Mr. Robert Irvine. Mr. Irvine, I can see your name's there somewhere.
Robert Irvine here.
Yes. Mr. Irvine, your name and address, please.
My name is Robert Irvine. My address is 16 Stanmore Road, Kenmore.
All right. You have 3 minutes starting now.
Thank you very much. Look, I speak from Gadigal land and acknowledge and pay respect to the Gadigal nation and elders past and present. I thank the panel for allowing me to speak in support of the application by NAPRA Enterprise to reopen the Newtown Community Weekend Market on Newtown Square. In particular, I support the proposal that the market operate regularly, but at a lower intensity over the whole weekend. I submit that this is in the best interests of the community, providing the community benefit of the market itself, while allowing more space for other community activities to proceed on Newtown Square concurrently. As a local resident, I'm concerned about the good management of this vital public space. I find it regrettable that zoning provisions appear to make it difficult for the council to manage Newtown Square in an integrated way. And I don't fully understand those, but I'm sure that the members of the panel do. Accordingly, I've got some recommendation, which I'll run through quickly and happy to answer questions if you wish to ask them. Firstly, I think that the panel should reject condition 11C as redundant and impractical. It's a public road. So excluding all vehicles is going to make management of the site impossible. Many of the stalls will have wheels, and so the stalls will be wheeled on in their little wheels. They're a vehicle under this term. So I recommend that the council reject it. That's condition 11C. Further, I recommend that the panel clarify the meaning of food in the context of draft condition number 7, no food sales. The sale of food from the market is prohibited. No food is to be cooked or sold in the markets. The prohibition of cooking and the sale of cooked takeaway food is understood, but the prohibition of the sale of all food is very broad. It's very broad indeed, and it would seem to impact on the future use of the site. In the past, in my experience, the market allowed the sale of fruit and vegetables, green grocery products, bakery products, bread, pretzels and cakes, cooked and sold in, you know, brown paper bags, preserves and sauces, sold in, prepared by local households and sold in bottles. And also the sale of homegrown produce. So when a householder had some excess capsicums, they were able to go along to the market, use a basket and sell their produce in the markets. I suspect that that's not what the panel is intending to do, but I think that unless you do clarify the meaning of the word food in draft condition number 7, that will be the impact, and it will be a real constraint on future council management of this really, really precious site.
Excuse me, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
You could have another 2 minutes, but Mr. Irvine, please proceed.
Thank you, sir. I have two more points to make. I seek a solution to the conflict arising from the SP2 zoning of the classified road part of the site. I understand some other legislation, but I don't understand the planning legislation well, but I'm sure that the members of the panel will be able to bring their minds to bear to a solution so that the council is able to manage the whole of this site, the classified road part and the local road part, in an integrated way. The council has turned this area of public road into a really vital public square. Newtown lacks them. This is a key community facility in Newtown, and the council ought to be able to manage it in an integrated way. And I'm appealing to the panel to find a way within the planning system to do that. And finally, I invite the panel to consider the possible application of the street trading provisions of the Local Government Act in this case. We've got a public road being managed here. This is not private land being developed. The council has full powers under the Local Government Act to manage street trading on public roads, both local roads and classified roads. And I would really encourage the panel to give consideration to the street trading provisions under Section 68 of the Local Government Act, and to consider whether they are a better pathway for management of this site rather than a strictly locked down and conditioned development approval. Now, I'll stop there. I've had my time and I'm very grateful for you for hearing me out. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Any questions, panel?
Thank you, Mr. Irvin. Oh, sorry, Lindsay, you go.
My turn this time. Yeah. Just could you clarify, Mr. Irwin, you would be happy for condition 7 to be worded so that there is no cooking on site, but the sale of food is okay. I'm just a little unclear as in to what you intend in terms of food. So would that condition be amended so that there isn't any cooking on site, but there is sale of food?
Look, I'm not expert enough to be able to advise you on the conditioning of a development application. I'm a citizen member supporting an application. I have two concerns. One is I know the applicant and I'm confident that they will be running a really good market. This is a really, really competent group of people. Secondly, I'm concerned about the council's ongoing management of this precious public site. And that's the reason I raised this question. There's a big difference in public health and amenity and other impacts of the sale of food as a product, like a greengrocery, something that you're buying to take home, and the cooking and sale of food to be eaten on the premises. The sale of cooked product eaten on the premises generates waste issues, it generates management issues, it generates public health issues that aren't present when someone is selling a bunch of capsicums from a basket that they've grown in their backyard, or when a wonderful creative cook brings exquisite sauces prepared and preserves prepared for sale. I would like the panel to be sure that when it imposes conditions on a place like this, this is a public square, a road, that it imposes no more conditions than are necessary to achieve the planning objectives that you see as appropriate for the site. Now,
there is a plan of management that we have had access to and looked through, but perhaps Mr. Hawke is able to continue on with that. Thanks for the discussion.
Look, could I just finish my comments by saying, yes, I think you should permit the sale of food, but not cooking or takeaway food.
Okay.
But
I guess all food in that on that site would be effectively takeaway, because...
All right. Well, let me not use the word takeaway.
Yeah.
Food cooked to be eaten on the site. Food cooked to be eaten on the site. I mean, I'm trying to find a way... I can't do the definition. You're better placed than me.
But I think we got your message, Mr. Irvin.
That's
great. Thank you.
Thank you, Lindsay. Look, you've touched on what my questions were a little. You say that you're a supporter, but you don't actually represent the applicant. Is that right?
Not at all, no.
And they chose not to send somebody, NAPA, to this meeting?
From my conversation with NAPA last night, they were making every effort to participate in this meeting. I have spent 2 solid hours getting the technology set up to be able to have this conversation with you.
Well,
it is not easy.
my question is around NAPA's experience in running markets.
I can speak to that.
Yeah.
I can speak to that. I have been a customer. of the Napa market stall at the Newtown markets over the past 5 years. I have observed Napa Enterprises to be the most responsible stallholder, a stallholder who's been concerned about looking after other stallholders, who has a really good relationship with the stallholders around them, and who provide a high quality product and also encourage people to engage, socially engage in the market. I hold Napa Enterprise to be a very responsible and very experienced community market manager.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Irvin.
All right, any other questions? If not, thank you, Mr. Irvin.
Oh, can I say something?
Wait a minute, there is a question. Yes.
You're muted.
This is the applicant.
I'm learning to use this thing. Sorry so much. I am Pana. We supplied for the to the market. And I've been in Newtown since 92, I think. And I had three shops running in Newtown area for a long time. But it got to me, so I decided not to do any more shops. And so I started doing the markets when the market opened. And so I've been running the market there and helping people and surviving from that until the COVID hit. And so at the moment, then I decided that I should apply for the DA, and that's what I did. I was encouraged to apply because talking to neighbors, a lot of the people in Newtown are sort of been around, so I know them. They said, well, you better apply for the DA. So that's what I've done. And now, yeah, I can run things. I've done, my background is engineering and I've worked for companies and all that. But at the moment I do this, and I do a coffee project because I come from Papua New Guinea. Now I also do a coffee project to serve, support our farmers in the villages. And that's the other thing that I do to help other people. Yeah.
Any questions, panel?
No.
No? All right. Thank you for that. Good. So we can now move on to item five. Item five is the application for the demolition of two buildings at Callan Park and associated landscaping and fencing. There is no one registered to speak on this matter, so we will consider the report amongst ourselves and come up with a determination. So we can then move on to item number six. This is the proposed development being a first floor addition at 5A Bungay Street, Leichhardt. We have noticed that Mr. Gavin Barnes wishes to speak on that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lloyd. Thank you to the panel. Yes. My name is Gavin Barnes, 217 Catherine Street in Leichhardt, and I immediately abuts onto the development. Look, you've got the detail in my submission. I don't propose to harp through everything that I've written there. My main concern was the illegal access onto the right-of-way, which is currently there, which I believe shouldn't be there. And I noticed in the council's determination that a condition of approval is that if they can't, if the applicant can't prove that it's okay to have that there or they've got permission, then it needs to be replaced with a fence. So I'm happy from that perspective. I guess the only other thing just to highlight here is the inconsistency. We're looking at a DA ourselves at the moment, and talking to council, one of the biggest problems they've said to us is the FSR ratio of 0.6 to 1 we've proposed. And I note that the FSR on this particular development is 1 to 1, yet council has, you know, spent time and effort justifying why that's okay for a similar property. So look, I don't propose to harp on about it. As I said, I don't understand some of the inconsistencies, particularly around that and bulk and scale, but I dare say what will happen will happen. That's all I need to say. Thank you, Mr. Lloyd.
Any questions from the panel?
No questions. Thank you.
No. All right. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
We can then move on to the next item number seven. This is the proposed development or redevelopment of an existing corner shop at 63 Northumberland Avenue, Stanmore. And we have a number of speakers for this one. First of all, Mr. Christopher Abrams. Is Mr. Abrams here? No, Mr. Abrams. See, do we have Mr. Abrams? We have someone trying to ring in.
No, it doesn't appear that he's on.
All right, well then we'll move on to the applicant, Mr. Jurakowski.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Bill Jurakowski here,
yes.
7 Temple Street, Stanmore.
Yes, please proceed.
First of all, I'd just like to thank Council for supporting the application. There's some design changes that I would like the panel to reject items on the following grounds. I suppose you've got the letter that I sent to you.
We do, yes.
Great. Well, we'll just start with design change 2B, which was to do with the front portion of the shop. We were sort of discussing with council if the bricks were in good state that we would retain them as that, but if they were not in a good state, council in their submission suggested that we render the bricks. And my argument here is we would like a distinction between the old shop and the 1970s additions at the back. So we're suggesting that instead of rendering the front portion of the shop, that it should be actually just painted bricks, which will show the window definition a lot better than rendering the whole facade. And our heritage consultant supports this as well, as I've written down. The windows and the proportions, the detail of the head, the arch, the rendered sill to the window, all of that will be lost if we were to go ahead and render the building in case the bricks aren't in good state. So I'm suggesting that we, if they're not good, they need to be painted only. And that way the back section will be rendered, and then the two distinctions between the front and the back would be a nice outcome. Change 2C, which is the schedule of finishes, that's just purely a point that I'm raising here. We engaged a professional to sort of advise us on colours, and we sort of thought with that what we've chosen is adequate and we like those colours, but council's got different colour schemes, so I'm hoping that the panel will look at that and agree with us. Change number 3 is the shower. Shower in the studio, in the office at the rear. I feel pretty strongly about having a shower in a space like that. Like, as I've mentioned, that any new office or up-to-date office has some sort of shower facilities in case people do want to go for a run or a walk, or they ride their bike to work. Having the assumption that this is going to be turned into a residential apartment down the track is really just assumptions. I mean, we don't want to go on assumptions. I'm designed this to be utilized by myself, and it's going to be approved as an office rather than residential. What would happen in years to come is, you know, who knows? So, during our discussion regarding that shower with Susanna Byers at the stage, we had another level designed, and during our discussions with Susanna and Andrew, they suggested on the phone that if I was to delete the upper section of this studio office, that they will allow the shower to go ahead. And
sorry, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
That's
pretty much it. I mean, like I said, I'm thankful that the council is supporting the application, but these three items, I feel that I'm strongly about, and I'm hoping that the panel looks at them favourably. Thank you. That's pretty much it.
Well, before you go, any questions, panel?
No questions, thanks.
No, thank you.
All right. Your town planner is registered to speak. Mr. Gersheet. I saw your name there somewhere.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. You proceed, please. Okay.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and panel members. My name is Eli Gersheet, the urban planner representing the applicant for this application. And overall, you know, we've reviewed the assessment report and agree with the recommendation for approval. I should point out that this is quite a modest upgrade to an old building within a conservation area. Overall, we're just adding about 12 square metres to the overall building. The building complies with the building height. We're actually providing substantial landscaping, while there's currently actually no landscaping at all on the site. And lastly, from a heritage perspective, we've worked closely with the heritage consultant and also council to achieve the results presented to council. So overall, you know, we're quite happy with the recommendation for approval. I'm subject to the changes to the conditions, as mentioned by Mr. Jurakowski. And just lastly, I'm available here if you have any questions for me.
Any questions, panel?
I just have one, if I may. There was your application seemed to be largely supported in the community, except for what was described as a garden room on the top. Can you tell me if there would be any objection to prohibition on any washing lines going up there, or indeed if we deleted the pergola from there?
Yeah, I'm happy to answer the question. This roof space will actually be the principal private open space for the top unit. So it is quite a fundamental space, whereas currently the unit, the building provides pretty much basic external amenity for the units. So from my point of view, this is quite a substantial upgrade.
I'm not suggesting that we take away.
I'm getting there. Yeah. As far as the pergola is concerned, the original design actually included some type of enclosed structure to provide extra amenity for the residents. And through discussions with council, we agreed that a pergola would be a better structure. From memory, I think council even suggested a pergola. So it is, you know, it is quite a comfortable space.
Thank you for that
question.
The only other thing was I couldn't quite work out from the plans, but the parapet to that upper level, it doesn't have to be increased from now, does it?
No, it doesn't. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, this is Bill Jurakowski, the applicant.
Yeah.
No, the parapet stays the same. The R-rail of the parapet is the same.
Okay, that's good. Thank you.
And the pergola, it was also to do with shelter and protection from the elements. I mean, it's some form of protection as well for the people to enjoy the space rather than just being out there when the elements are really nice with the sun and so on, but it's also to go out there when the elements aren't as good to sort of get out and enjoy it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions, panel members?
Just a very quick observation, given that there are two additional units and the office space going in, whether the applicant would have any objection to the introduction of a couple of bike facilities, push bike. You've mentioned that you may well ride your own bike to work and you'd like a shower in the office building, but I was aware that there are actually no bicycle facilities proposed in the application, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on a couple of bike spaces going into the building.
something happened when you were asking the question, but I'm assuming it's all to do with the bicycles. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, just a couple of facilities need to be added. It's part of
the... Yeah, we could do that. Happy
yeah,
to do
that's
that.
Fine.
Yeah,
thank you. Space in that.
Yeah.
That's great. Terrific. Then you'll have a shower and possibly a shower and a bike rack in relation to your new office. Thank
sure.
you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions, panel? If not, I'll just ask again if Mr. Abrams is there. He's down to speak. But if he's not there, we'll move on to the next item. All right. So we'll move on to the next item. Number eight is 38 Denison Street. Hello?
Hello.
Number 38 Denison Street, Roselle, on the corner of Evans Street. Demolition and construction of a new dwelling. And I think we have the applicant available.
Hello, Mr. Chairman. I have the applicant myself, the designer from Pinnacle Plus, and I also have the owner and town planner, Ms. Shirazdad, with her hand up there, wishing to support to speak on this application.
Yes, all right, you proceed.
Firstly, thank you for the opportunity to present my case against the recommendation for refusal. I'd like to start by talking about clause 4.4, the floor space ratio. The basement level meets the definition as per the definition within the LEP 2011 that the floor level of the basement is predominantly below the existing ground level and the floor above the story is less than a metre above existing. The space proposed within the basement isn't excessive. It is only allowed the manoeuvring and the parking of two vehicles. Therefore, as the basement level meets the definition of a basement under the LEP and the space is required for parking and manoeuvring, the basement level should not be included in the FSR calculation. This was the same approach that has been taken by the LEC within the case of Fair Alexis versus City of Sydney, Canavita Bay. Therefore, the development does not contravene the FSR standard, which was in the assessing officer's report. In addition to that, the LEP 2011 states a minimum landscape area of 20%, as demonstrated within that set's architectural plans, the building sheet number DA700. The development complies with the minimum requirement. The assessment officer states that this is contrary following the controls. In this regard, the submitted application follows the adequately identified landscaping and planting schedule for the site. Again, the requirement for a detailed landscape plan cannot be a reason for refusal and is something council can condition as part of the DA approval. The other thing I'd like to talk about is the proposed non-compliance with the site coverage. The built form in its current form activates the corner along Dover Road and Denison Street. The site coverage does not exceed the maximum requirement of 60%. I truly believe the assessing officer's calculations are incorrect. Notwithstanding, if given the opportunity, and this can be conditioned, the site coverage can easily be amended to meet the minimum 60% requirement. I won't talk about bulk scale and street character. I'll leave that to Ms. Shirazdad to talk about. The last thing I'd like to address is the parking. There will be no significant loss of parking as demonstrated within the submitted plans. There's sufficient space along the Evans Street for on-street parking. The proposed vehicular access is consistent with the surrounding buildings, particularly number 36, which is the immediate adjoining property to the north. The current state of the property is the dilapidated house with no secure parking. As stated before, the basement level is below the existing ground level and is not visible from Denison Street, nor does it increase the dwelling of the height. On that point, the site is flat. However, a great sloping topography to the right at Evans Street means the predominant part of the building is underground. In regards to the last issue raised by the assessing officer for grounds of refusal, a geotechnical report and updated stormwater plans can be conditioned as part of conditions of consent. where we can have a stormwater management plan.
Sorry, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
I've got one last point, if I can, Mr. Lloyd.
Right, proceed.
The last one talks about overshadowing. The concerns were raised regarding overshadowing onto the private open space due to the orientation of the site. The proposed dwelling will not cast any overshadowing within the rear yard. Any current overshadowing is existent and caused by the adjoining dwellings and boundary fencing. So, again, there is no overshadowing concerns. There's no privacy concerns to any of the adjoining neighbours. All the shadowing falls upon the street, and concludes my submission. Thank you for your time.
All right, thank you. Who wants to go next?
Mr. Chair, sorry to interrupt. This is T here. I've just noticed that there's a bit of disruption or interference during people's presentations. So could I just ask that everyone puts their microphone on mute if they're not speaking or addressing the panel?
Thank you. All right. Now, someone is attempting to speak and is on mute.
Good afternoon, Chairman and panel members. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to speak. My name is Shaharazad Rahi. I'm the owner of the subject property at number 38 Denison Street, Roselle. I'm a graduate architect and a senior town planner at Randwick City Council. I have over 20 years' experience in local government planning matters and have been an expert planner for council at the Land Environment Court. I've read the assessing officer's report and disagree with council's findings for refusal of the application in relation to FSR relating to bulk and scale, and in particular character of the building, landscaping and site coverage. My assessment is as follows. I'd like to start with FSR and character of the building. I'd like the panel not to focus on the numerical controls, as this is a guide to establish whether the development complies with the objectives of the of this clause. FSR operates in conjunction with building height, wall height, and setback controls. The rear of the building is embedded within the contours of the land along Evans Street. The proposed development mainly reads as a single-storey dwelling along this street. The building is set back 8.2 metres from the rear boundary, which is greater than the adjoining building and within this section of the block. The area provided is more than adequate for use as a recreational facility for planting of significant vegetation. The front setback complies with the established front setback along this section of the block and directly adjoining development. Noting there are a significant number of buildings and dwellings within this section of the block, which are sited on the boundary with nil or little setbacks. Along Evans Street, the building is well articulated and planter boxes are proposed to soften the walls. We are happy to provide additional windows if you feel this will further create articulation. The property has two street frontages, which is less susceptible to many impacts. The additional overshadowing impacts as a result of the proposed development are mainly casted on the street, and a larger setback is created to the rear to allow better solar access into the dwelling due to the orientation of the site and the fact that the dwelling is embedded in the contours of the land. The shadows that are currently exist on the subject site are from surrounding existing development and are not as a result of the proposed development. There are no significant privacy concerns. Majority of the windows proposed face the street. A small balcony is proposed to the rear off the master bedroom on the first floor level to allow for northern light and cross ventilation. The proposal complies with the height control objectives. Higher floor to ceiling height is created on the lower ground floor level of the living areas to allow for better solar access due to the topography of the site, which responds to the site constraints. The basement is underground and does not create any additional bulk and scale. Landscaping is provided to the front of the dwelling to soften the driveway. Given the above, the main concern comes back down to whether development complies with the character of the surrounding area. As identified in our street study, there are a number of contemporary homes and modern homes along Denison Street. Design is subjective, and these contemporary modern homes, whether it be assessed or approved under exempt or complying or in the court, cannot be ignored, as they do form the future and existing character of the surrounding area. Moreover, the objective states that the building is to be compatible with the desired future character of the area in relation to bulk, form and scale, and also to minimise the impact of the bulk and scale of buildings. As I have noted earlier, the proposed development meets these objectives. More importantly, the proposed development is not within a conservation area to retain the character and features of the existing building design in the streetscape, and a greater setback is provided to the rear in order to be sympathetic to the adjoining building, which is the conservation area. The construction materials and finishes proposed are of high quality, low maintenance, and are of neutral tones, which matches and integrates with the design at number 36 Denison Street. The wall along Evans Street is modulated and articulated to follow the angle of the building and to reinforce the corner site as stipulated in the DCP. In
my chair, that's 3 minutes.
Sorry, I just got I've got at least another few minutes. Is that okay?
Yes,
proceed. In my professional opinion, the building is not out of character with the adjoining development and will improve the existing streetscape aesthetics, of which an abandoned and dilapidated building currently exists and encourages street kids to graffiti and vandalise. The building is currently unsightly and is not secure and safe. I did have an image that I want to show you where the current fence is graffitied at the moment, and it's a new fence. A pitched roof was investigated, and the 3D montage demonstrated a pitched roof will result in additional bulk and scale and is not a better outcome when sited between buildings that have flat roofs. Also, having a pitched roof will not allow a large skylight roof, which provides good amenity and ambience in the house. Now I'd like to focus on landscaping and site coverage. The subject site has an area of 250 square metres under clause 4.3A of the Leichhardt LEP landscaped area for residential accommodation where the lot size is greater than 230 square metres, 20% of the site area applies and site coverage is not to exceed 60% of the site area. Therefore, I disagree with Council's calculation interpretation in relation to landscaping and site coverage. In my professional opinion, I understand the first floor level to the front and rear of the building that is cantilevered over the landscaped area is considered to be the like. So in the controls, it says the like, noting whether enclosed or unenclosed shouldn't be included in the site coverage calculations. Council has excluded this area into the landscape calculation and has included it in the site coverage, which results in the non-compliances. The cantilevered structures to the front and rear are greater than 2.4 metres above the ground level and is capable of being used as landscaped and recreational area, and therefore, my professional opinion, shouldn't be excluded from the landscaped area and should not be included as site coverage. Notwithstanding the above, I believe that the landscaped area and site coverage will meet the objectives of the control in that the area is suitable for substantial tree planting and for use and enjoyment of residents. We maintain landscaped corridors between adjoining properties. The front and rear setback are greater than adjoining development, which limits the building footprint and provides adequate provision for stormwater infiltration, landscaping and private open space. In addition to the above, arguments have been raised to council in relation to whether the swimming pool should be included as site coverage. The calculations to landscape area and site coverage was challenged by council. An email was sent on the 30th of May 2021 noting the definition of site coverage in the Leichhardt LEP, which identifies four inclusions. Swimming pools are not one of those inclusions. This is reinforced by the Department of Guide to calculating site coverage. Whilst that guide relates to CODESEP, both the CODESEP and the standard LEP definition of site coverage are identical. Councillors also know that the methodology has been used in front of the Land Environment Court without dissent from court in its judgment in that regard. I disagree. The definition of site coverage under SEP code is not identical to the Leichhardt LEP. I believe Council is referring to the Department Guide for calculating site coverage under the General Housing Code, which has been replaced by the new Housing Code, and the site coverage control has since been removed. So if you build a house under the Housing Code, you no longer need to worry about site coverage. I note that Affordable Rental Housing SEP provides the definition for site coverage under Schedule 1 for secondary dwelling, and as expected, swimming pools are excluded. Now, I just have a little bit more to go. I'm almost done. Also, Council was asked to provide the name of the court case on a number of occasions where Council successfully established the inclusion of swimming pools in the site coverage calculations, and up to date, it has not been provided. Notwithstanding the above, we are happy to provide a 1 metre wide landscaped area to the northern side of the pool by increasing the setback from 500 millimetres to 1 metre and reducing the length of the pool to the eastern side to allow for 1.2 metre landscaped area. This will increase the landscaped area and improve landscaping on the site. I do believe a condition can be included which requires a landscape plan to be provided by a suitably qualified and experienced professional which will identify the landscape, landscaping, significant vegetation and planting schedule for the site. And that, I've almost done, I've literally got a minute. I would like to touch base with a number of other items which have been raised as concern. The DCP notes a parking demand of 0 to 2 car spaces for residential accommodation. We are providing 2 off-street car spaces on the site, which will improve parking demand and will be in the public interest. On-street parking can be retained directly opposite the subject site by moving the stop sign and providing a 3-metre wide driveway to comply with the BCA. This can be addressed via condition of consent. I also do believe a geotechnical report can be provided as part of condition of consent in relation to the basement. The existing fence along Denison Street is currently solid and has a fence height of 1.29 metres to a maximum height of 1.4 metres due to the crossfall of the street footpath from south to north. The existing fence will be retained and will be rendered in concrete to be consistent with the design of the proposed dwelling and the adjoining fence at number 36 Denison Street. I would like to conclude that the application is only for a dwelling house. The existing building has been abandoned for over 30 years. It's dilapidated. It's unsightly. We are making significant improvements to the street aesthetics. As a senior town planner, my position requires me to attend court, which makes me an expert on these matters. And with certainty, I have complete confidence this application will be supported. So let's avoid council and myself wasting precious time, money and resources when this matter can be adhered to here and now. Thank you, Chairman and panel members.
Any questions, panel members?
No questions from me, no.
None? No questions? All right. Do we have another speaker on this?
No, we don't. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you for that. We'll take on board what you've put to us and publish our decision in due course.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We can now move on to item number 9, which is the proposed construction of a secondary dwelling at number 4 Haberfield Road, Haberfield. There are no people who are registered to speak on this matter, so we will pass over that one and move to the next item, item number 10, 144 Elizabeth Street, Ashfield. This is proposed additional story to a heritage item. We have a number of people who wish to speak on this one. First of all, Mr. Teresi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and panel members. Yes, I'm a town planner, and we've also have today we've got Mr. Davies, who's our heritage consultant, who will be addressing you as well today. And we also have our architect here if there's any questions at the end of our presentation. Clearly, we're disappointed with the recommendation of refusal, which is before you today. We're actually seeking that the panel actually support the application and approve it as per the conditions which are attached to the report, with the exception of condition 2, which I'll actually explain later on in my presentation. As I said, Mr. Davies will talk about the heritage issues, so there's no duplication on, and just going to focus on the planning issues. It's important to note in the first instance that the proposal in terms of council's LEP controls in terms of height and FSR is compliant. The FSR control for this site is 0.7:1, and we propose an FSR of 0.39:1. In my view, that actually reinforces that this is a modest addition in terms of its scale and bulk. It's also important to note that there's been no submissions made against this proposal by the community. And actually, in fact, I note on the front page of the report, it appears that there's actually a supporter to this application. And it's also important to note that we do adjoin to our rear a residential flat building, which is part 3, part 4 stories in terms of overall bulk and scale, and extends along the whole parameter of the to our rear, along our rear boundary. And I'm sure the panel's been to the site, so they would understand that context. In terms of the planning issues, there are 2 issues I want to address. One relates to external wall height and the other one relates to privacy, which links back to condition number 2. In terms of the external wall height, it is our submission that the actual development is actually compliant with the external wall height. We documented that in the statement of environmental effects accompanying the application. Based on the report, I sought clarification from our architect, who's also confirmed that that is the case. Our external wall height is actually 5.9 metres to the corner in which the officer references. I don't know why the report acknowledges it's 700 millimetres above, because it's clearly not. You'll note in the cross-section, the floor-to-ceiling height of the first floor is kept to its minimum at 2.4 metres, and actually there's a bit of a rake in the roof on the perimeter of the addition to try to minimise the overall height of the wall, so it was compliant with the wall height. So our view that the development is actually compliant in terms of that wall height. The other issue relates to privacy and the privacy to the upper balcony to the rear. The concern is that we're going to look towards, we understand, the residential flat building. As the panel would note, this actual balcony is off a study slash lobby area. It's not off a living area. The balcony is only internally 1.4 metres wide by 4.2 metres.
Excuse me, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
I'll only be another half a minute, Chair.
Proceed.
And the actual separation between the balcony to the residential flat building is actually 19.4 metres. So there's a quite significant separation between the two buildings. As the panel will be aware, under ADG, in terms of building separation, 12 metres is the standard. So we're well compliant in that regard. So in that regard, we believe condition two should be deleted, which requires the actual balcony to be removed. It's our submission that this proposal is worthy of approval. And my view is, after probably Mr. Davies on the heritage has spoken, if the panel has any questions, it's probably better in us answering any questions maybe after our presentation. So happy to do so. But if the panel has questions now, I'm happy to answer those as well.
Any questions at this stage, panel?
No.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Davies.
Yes, thank you. Stephen Davies. I'm a heritage consultant with Urbis. I'm also the former chair of the Heritage Council of New South Wales, and I am alternate chair of two planning panels in the metropolitan region. So I'm very aware of the procedure and also the heritage matters pertaining to this particular site. We went through a very detailed investigation of the dwelling. It was my advice to the architect and the client that we should set the proposal back to the principal ridge line changed to the rear of the dwelling, so that it had a prominent front ridge on this building. It's been mentioned that it was situated in front of a very large residential flat building, and that's quite illustrated on the plans. It was also mentioned that there should be an extension of 1.5 stories, but we've been very careful, and I think that we've explained the height limits in the planning matters, but we're very careful to retain the ceiling heights internally and not invade by setting down into the dwelling itself. The interiors of this building have been carefully analysed, and they've been the subject of conservation works by a heritage architect, a registered architect, and we have looked at the interiors and the restoration of those interiors very carefully. And I'll go on to the sort of, I suppose, comparison between whether the idea of a heritage item and a contributory item in a moment. The proposal maintains the extant layout of the interiors and restores those changes, appropriate changes over time, to the interiors in the dwelling. So it's a very good interior and exterior heritage conservation exercise. A separate pavilion has been recommended, is not suitable due to the existing garage structure to the rear of the dwelling and the available open space. Now, this dwelling is one of three identical dwellings. We weren't able to get access to the other two, but this is the only one of the three that was listed. So this is a strange anomaly where you have three standard representative interwar bungalows, very similar to those on the opposite side of Elizabeth Street, which are in a conservation area. And we believe that it does have the attributes of a contributory item in a conservation area, and certainly wouldn't have objected if the three of the buildings had been included as a group with the adjoining or neighbouring dwellings of the same period. The dwelling has been accorded, we believe, a higher significance than is warranted, but however, we have still treated it as if it were a heritage item. It's not rare, and it's it is very representative. The proposed extension, we believe, is well designed, it's well proportioned, and of the appropriate material. There were discussions with the council in relation to whether it had a pitched extension or a gable end extension, and we've managed this particular design in accordance with council's own recommendations at those very early stages.
Excuse me, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
I probably only need one more minute at this point.
Yes, please proceed. Okay.
So the real issue, you know, we've treated the building as if it's a heritage item. It's being very well cared for. So the real issue is the first floor extension. And we believe that because it's been set significantly behind the front ridge, the front gables are well recognised. They're actually repeated in the extension. It has the appropriate pitch, the appropriate materials, and we believe the appropriate location. And I think because of its history of its listing, I think the context in which it sits and the design as a well-resolved building, that this particular application is one that deserves to be approved and will not have, as we've said, an impact on the conservation of the context of the three buildings, and you will still be able to read its original form and its shape and its site coverage. So I'm commending the application to you.
Any questions from the panel? No questions. Oh, well, what do you know? Now, do you have your architect here?
We do.
Would you like to proceed?
Can you hear me?
Yes, please.
Hello? Please. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, okay. Yes, I will not be adding to what the planner or the heritage consultants have already stated. So I was only here, I only registered in case there's questions to be asked.
All right, any questions from the panel?
No.
No? Mr. Johnson? No questions? Well, there you go. No questions. Now, Mr. Mazzeo. Mr. Mazzeo?
Yes, I'm here. I'm the homeowner.
All right. You have the floor.
Okay. I just want to say that I purchased the house and I love the house. And I purchased the house with the intention to build upstairs. I was not allowed to build from the front to the back. I found out later on. So I was offered by the council to build from the rear only, the rear one third only. So I accepted that. I paid all my consultants to supply all the correct documentation and drawings, and council rejected it. And that's why we are at the panel now. I feel sorry that they did that to me. And I feel that the panel should reconsider my application for approval, because quite a bit has been done by my consultants to make it all above board and correct and standard building structure using all the correct items and fabric. And that's all I want to say. And thank you for having me speak as the homeowner.
All right. Any questions from the panel?
No.
All right. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
As with the previous matters, we'll consider what's been put to us and we will be publishing our determination in due course. So with that, we can now move on to the next item, number 11. This is the proposed strata subdivision
of an existing heritage building at the corner of Hercules Street and Liverpool at Ashfield. We have Melissa Neighbour here, I think. I saw your name somewhere.
I'm here.
Right. Please proceed.
Great, thank you. Well, yes, hello, Chairman and panel members, and thank you for your time and also the expertise that you bring today. And thank you for this time to present this case. So essentially, this, as you put forward there, it is just a strata subdivision of an existing building. The context of the building is that it is a heritage building, and it does hold significance, and it's representative of an early commercial building in the Ashfield area. So its significance in that it's a rarity. Now the old style building is built to the boundaries at the moment, as it always has been. And what the owners seek to do is essentially, as we said, just strata subdivide the existing building. So in terms of, you know, increasing FSR or anything like that, it's really just a conversion of the way it's managed, going from company title to strata title, which benefits everybody, and just is a more modern way of operating and managing a building and its ownership. So the complications that come with this, though, why you would think would be relatively straightforward, is that council have raised three issues. Now, the first are two issues that I think we can clear off pretty quickly, which I will do, because I think the third one is a little bit more curly and we might need a bit more time. The first one is around the heritage matters. Now, council have said that they think there's going to be impacts here and that they can't assess the impacts. However, in an information request response that I provided to council, which wasn't provided in the council report, which I have submitted to the panel, and I do hope that you have seen that. However, I will quickly run over it. The BCA report, the Building Code of Australia report, clearly outlines the very minor cosmetic changes that are needed to upgrade this to fire safety regulations. And we hired a heritage consultant to look through that report. I asked that consultant, do you need plans to be able to assess the impact? Her response was no, and she's provided a very detailed heritage report that assesses the impact on heritage, and she confirms that there will be no impact. We're talking about things like adding in fire hydrants and some replacements of balustrades. I don't believe that constitutes or warrants the need for additional plans or elevations or sections, and that was our response to council. The second issue is around, let me just bring it up. It's to do with the fact that they wanted some details on the plans to show what areas were habitable and non-habitable, which were determined by the BCA report. As it's been now, the building has to meet the current regulations. One of the mezzanine levels doesn't meet the height levels, and therefore it needs to be non-habitable. That can be conditioned quite easily, that we can amend that on the plans. The third issue is a little bit more tricky. Now, this has been a 10-year issue that's been going on, as I understand, with the owners. Council, at the moment, because the building's old, it's been built to the boundaries. There is no current area for storing any bins on site. The bins are stored in the back lane on Fox Lane, and that's how it's been run for 10 years. As I understand, council have sent a number of letters over the years asking the owners to fix this problem, and they've written back and said, we're happy to fix it. What do we do? Our building is constrained, and it's been going round and round in circles. Nothing's been resolved.
Excuse me, Chair, that's 3 minutes. Sorry.
So I've probably just one more minute just to clarify this issue, if that's all right.
Yeah,
thanks. So the concern is that this is a very simple strata subdivision, but because of we cannot meet the waste management controls of the DCP due to the site constraints, it effectively stops this ability of this building being strata subdivided, which is really just a very important basic progress forward for the owners. And also, if there were to be any change of use or new tenants in any of these shops, this old building, will never be able to meet these waste management controls. So effectively, it could eventually become a dilapidated and vacant building if we don't resolve this waste issue, which we would really like to do, but we believe that council are going to have some leniency here, given that the building's built to the boundary and it's a rarity in its significance. Thank you.
Any questions, panel?
No.
No? No questions? All right, there are no questions. Thank you for that. And we will consider what you've put to us and publish our decision in due course. Thank you very much. So this then brings us to the final item. This is the proposed residential flat building at 29 Tupper Street in Moore.
Excuse me, Chair.
Yes?
Lindsay, I'm going to have to exit the meeting because I had previously considered this as a panel member in February.
But you do need to come back, don't you?
Yes, but I need to go now. So could you contact me when you want me back, please?
We'll just exclude you from this discussion and bring you back in when we have to.
Okay. Do I now exit?
No. You will be excluded.
Okay.
By the host.
Thank you, T.
Or
Claire.
Okay. Lindsay, I will call you to join the meeting again when we're in a closed session.
T, I need to exit from here now. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. We still have a quorum, so we can continue. We have two neighbours who wish to make a submission, and then we have the planner and architect for the proposal. Firstly, Susanna Hohen. Is Susanna Hohen there?
Hi. Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, you have 3 minutes starting now. We want your name and address first.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you. Hi, everybody. Thank you for taking the time today to hear me in opposition of this proposal as it currently stands. So my name is Susanna Howan, and I reside in the building at Unit 8 of 33 to 37 Tupper Street, which is on the southern boundary of this proposed development. I have submitted a written application, so I will just highlight the 3 points that I put in the submission, which all revolve around the impacts that this proposal will have on mine and my neighbour's enjoyment of our properties. The first point I want to raise is in regard to the height and positioning of the building, which will remove complete access to any sunlight into a number of the flats. Given the slope of the street and the size of the building, it will tower over the building, over our building on the southern boundary, removing all light from a number of apartments, including my own. Currently, we enjoy sunlight at the moment in winter all morning and into the early afternoon, and we will lose complete access to the sunlight, taking away our enjoyment of light and access to sun, which is extremely important for mental health and enjoyment of a property. Secondly, also relates to the size of the building, but mainly in regards to its proximity to our apartment on the southern border. Given how close it is, we will look directly onto a very imposing brick wall. Not only will this be not very nice to look at, but also it will impact on the privacy that we can enjoy within our apartment. We look directly from our main living space on our balcony onto this development, meaning with the development overlooking us, we will not be able to enjoy our balcony or our main living space. Finally, I just wanted to raise a point in regards to the removal of trees from the property at 29 Tupper Street. There are currently, I'm looking out my window now, it's very green, it's beautiful, there are lots of old trees, there's lots of birds and native wildlife, and by removing these trees and not adequately replacing them, they will be removing the home for this wildlife, and also removing the greenery from our neighborhood. Again, greenery is extremely important for mental health, for enjoyment of a property, for enjoyment of a neighborhood, and they will be taking away from this. Those are my 3 points that I wanted to raise, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Thanks.
All right, any questions, panel?
I don't have any questions, thank you.
No?
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Final submission. Ewa Wetzlick.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Well, I'm another resident of 33 Tupper Street, and I have to express how disappointed I am with the council's assessment of this supposedly revised application and how little attention had been given to our concerns. The revisions are really cosmetic. The non-compliances remain, and the overshadowing is enormous. In this COVID era, with all 12 families of the building spending entire days at home, to have a living room with the adequate natural light, it's a lifesaver. And the balcony is the only safe outdoor area. I just cannot comprehend how condemning so many people to such significant loss of amenity could be considered acceptable. And then there are trees on our properties. 5 of them are located less than a meter from the boundary. The root system will be cut to allow for the basement parking planned on the boundary. The plants don't even have tree protection zone allocated to our trees. We have asked repeatedly for the root mapping investigation to take place at the true point of the excavation as per industry standards, not 3 meters away. But the issue was ignored. And don't really think that the arborist statement that the proposal is unlikely to harm our trees is a substitute for a solid methodology. And then there are the trees on the actual site. As you probably all know, we lost 900 trees in the last year in the Inner West, nearly all of them on the private land. In its current form, the proposal requires removal of 7 trees, which are between 10 and 25 meters in height. They have canopies, and as we all know, canopies mitigate urban heat island effect. Only 2 of the trees are being replaced, the ones on public land. In the proposed development, there is no space whatsoever to plant replacement trees big enough to provide shade. The plans claim that 280 square meters is a deep soil area, but most of it is actually paved footpaths, and some of the space is under balconies. The documentation contains other misleading details, but most importantly, the revisions failed to address the major reasons for the application being rejected in the first place: our loss of amenity and the treatment of the trees. And how is this deemed acceptable is just beyond me. Thank you.
Any questions, panel?
No, thank you very much.
No questions, thank you. Thank you for that. And now we can get Mr. Teresi back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and panel members. Clearly, this time I'm actually supporting the recommendation before the panel for approval. It's a comprehensive assessment of the proposal. This is an 8.2, and we have made some changes based on the feedback the previous panel have made, and I might just touch on some of those changes so there's an appreciation of it. One of the suggestions which was made was the consideration of moving the rear building, which I'll call the residential flat component, because it is two terrace type dwellings facing the street, but to move a portion of that building further to the north. And so this proposal actually facilitated that. The logic was, and I think it was an appropriate comment of the panel, was that because there was a gap between the northern buildings, moving that building forward wouldn't have an impact and would improve the interface to the adjoining property. You'll note, and I will touch on it when we get into comments about setbacks, in doing so, we've also ensured that the planning of those apartments have a lot of non-habitable rooms to the south. And so when you actually look at separation, some of the buildings are actually are compliant with ADG as non-habitable rooms to habitable rooms where we've got separations of 9 metres. So there is parts of the building which is clearly compliant, and the panel would appreciate this as an infill development between two existing residential flat buildings. So we've made that change. In the original proposal, there was concern, or there was the driveway along the southern boundary was capped with a slab and extended all the way to the boundary. To minimise bulk and scale issues, we've elected to remove that cap over the driveway, and therefore that opened up the actual building to that southern side by reducing that bulk and scale. What it also does, and it's pointed out, this landscaping on the northern side of the adjoining property, that obviously therefore doesn't impinge on the ability for canopy and whatnot to extend over the subject site as time progresses as well. So it's freeing up space for canopy growth. So again, that's been overcome through these changes. There was a concern about non-compliance of the communal open space. As the panel members might be mindful, ADG does set a design objective, and that is to provide communal open space, but it also says if you can't provide it, one of the things you can do is actually provide larger balconies. Now, this is a small-scale development with only 8 apartments, and as the panel would appreciate, there's 2 units which are facing the street which have quite large courtyards of 40 square metres, and one I think is 36 off memory. And then the remaining balconies to the residential flat building have balconies which are in the order of 50 to 100% greater than what ADG recommends. And as I said, ADG does say that a consideration of reduction of communal open space can be given where there is balconies which are of a larger size than ADG. So it's about balancing that provision.
Excuse me, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
Do you need this much longer, Mr. Teresi?
I do, Mr. Chair, and I think it's important that we obviously address some of the points made by the objectors. I think it'll be useful for the panel.
Yes, please.
Thank you. So we've actually made changes then to the balconies to ensure that we actually provide appropriate recreational facilities to the development. We're short of a motorbike space in the original scheme, and we've now provided that in the design, so we've addressed that issue as well. I'll probably just now focus on the tree issues, particularly the comment about the route mapping. Yes, there was extensive route mapping which was done along the boundary, and council officers and yourself would have access to those reports. The actual route mapping went down to 1.5 metres in depth, and it went down to 1.5 because that corresponds to the lowest level of the car parking level. And there was no routes at all found in that location. I think the other important thing to note is that the arborist report made reference to a retaining wall on the boundary. And the panel would also note that the adjoining property to ourselves is actually at a lower level than our level. And the reality is that retaining wall and those footings would have diverted any root structures, which is therefore the reason when they did the root mapping down to 1.5, they didn't actually find any roots at all. So we are quite comfortable that the report which has been prepared is professionally and appropriately done with appropriate recommendations. Council's officers have reviewed that and they're clearly satisfied. So from our perspective, we've certainly have addressed and ensured there's no impact to the landscaping to the adjoining property to ourselves. There is retention of 4 of the more critical trees on the site, which are the larger trees with larger canopies, and there's no intention at all to actually impact those, and there's appropriate recommendations by the arborist report for their retention. And there are a number of other trees which were removed, but they were deemed to be either in a very poor condition or were actually exempt under the actual orders, and that we don't need council approval for their removal. But in saying that, the reality is that the retention of the trees which were deemed to be significant does provide canopy coverage over the site. There is significant deep soil in the perimeter and around the trees which are being retained, which therefore will ensure that the longevity of those trees. I think unless the panel has any other specific questions, I might just leave it at that.
Any questions, panel?
Not from me, no.
No, all right. Then we can hear from Mr. David Randerson.
Mr. Lloyd, I was here just to ask any panel, answer any panel questions, but thank you very much.
Okay, Mr. Anderson is the architect. Any questions, panel members?
No.
Everyone's shaking their heads. All right. Well, that concludes all the presentations that we have listed. So I think we can sign off and close the formal public meeting. And we, panel members, will retire to determine our attitude on each matter.
Thank you.
I'll formally close the public meeting.